With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello again and welcome to the latest episode of My Big Break, the podcast series from Motorsport that looks into the key moments in a driver's career that led them to where they are today. I'm your host Chris Medland, and for this week's episode my guest is Kevin Magnussen, who talks about how a present from Ron Dennis when he was a toddler, along with his name, opened doors in F1, and Kevin also talks about the signs that told him he didn't have Renault's full backing, plus why he chose not to tempt fate when it came to his surprise chance to return with Haas. Kevin, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show to talk about your career so far and the pretty topsy-turvy road you've been on. We're looking for the big moments that led to things going in a certain direction, and it'd be easy to say that being born a Magnussen was your first big break.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't think the chance of me, you know, getting into racing would have been very big if my dad hadn't been a racing driver. So, It's a good thing, and it's been great having someone that close to you who has been through it all and lived all those experiences. And also just been, you know, my dad hasn't been at the racetracks very often. He was very busy, so it wasn't him who was taking me to the go-kart track and running me and doing the mechanics on the kart. It was my uncle. I think I was very lucky with those circumstances.
I was going to say, is it partly as well just because his racing career meant you were around it as a young age and it became something that you always saw? Or was it the fact that it was your dad and you wanted to emulate your dad? Like, what do you think actually is the thing that hooked you into racing because of him, if that makes sense?
I think in the very beginning, I was 2 years old, you know, when they put me in a go-kart for the first time. And I think back then I just liked driving, you know, and I didn't understand that my dad was a racing driver and that was his job. I had no perception of that. So I just liked driving around in the go-kart, and, you know, I think they saw that I really enjoyed it and that made them enjoy it more. And, you know, they thought, oh, it'd be cool maybe if he could become a racing driver too. I don't know. It was my uncle who was kind of leading this, and he was very... I think my uncle was, from an early point, very ambitious on my behalf. He'd been my dad's mechanic in karting, and they had won 3 world championships together and had loads of success in karting. And then my dad moved on to, racing in Formula Fords in England, and my uncle didn't go with him. You know, he actually kept working in go-karts and worked for some of the manufacturers in karting. So when I was born, I think he was hoping like mad that I would be into it too, so he could go through it all again. So he without him I surely wouldn't have been able to start from such a young age. And, you know, he was picking me up from kindergarten and taking me to the racetrack, and that's how it was, you know, every second day or something. So I was very lucky to have him.
And what's his name? We've got to give him credit.
Eric Magnussen.
But was he then thinking he just wanted to help you in karting again, or did he want to basically take you further in a way, I guess, he didn't with your dad?
No, I don't. It's not something we ever talked about, but it seemed like he just really liked taking me to the racetrack. And actually, he has a son too that started around the same time. So we were racing against each other and we were just having a great time. So I think he just enjoyed that a lot. And of course, I think he had... I have a feeling that he was hoping that we would really get good at it and that he could go through all this that he'd been through with my dad once again. But, you know, really, I think it was just that we were having such a great time. Him, you know, me and his son, my cousin, Dennis, who is also a racing driver today, so Dennis Lind. I think we were just having a great time, and my uncle enjoyed it hugely. And me and Dennis were racing each other like it was the world championship every day. So, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Does that mean your dad was maybe a bit more distant then to that part of your career?
Yeah, he was. I mean, he lived in England. I lived in Denmark. My uncle lived there. And, you know, we were always racing, driving go-kart in Denmark. So it wasn't very often that my dad was able to, you know, participate in all this. So when he could, it was awesome. I enjoyed it a lot. You know, I wanted to show my dad how fast I was. And, you know, I can remember all of those feelings. It was always like an extra pressure when my dad came out to the track. I was like, gotta push now, you know, show him what I got. So it was awesome. A lot of good memories.
And well, you mentioned how karting went. I mean, you were successful in karts, but then stepping up into, was it Danish Formula Ford when you won the title in the first season? That must have been a big confidence boost for you to translate that kind of potential into karts.
Yeah, it was. It's kind of like we didn't. You know, my dad is a racing driver and was a racing driver, but he didn't. He has never made the kind of money that, you know, would be able to fund me racing in, you know, a little bit in karting, but even karting was too much. So we had to stop racing in karting because it became too expensive. And, you know, the next step for me in karting would be to go and do the Italian championship, like the WSK, which is like a world series of karting. And it would just be way, way too expensive. So we had this opportunity to go in Formula Ford in Denmark. And there were some sponsors that would get involved and, you know, to help my dad, and that would help me. And so I had that season. And Danish Formula Ford isn't the most competitive championship in the world, but my cousin was there, you know, so we kept racing each other, and we kind of just, you know, kept going as it had been always, so racing each other. And then, you know, after that I won that championship, and my dad was, Formula Ford was a support race for the main event that weekend, which was the Danish Touring Car Championship, and my dad was racing in that. His boss, the team owner of his team, is a very wealthy man in Denmark and a businessman. And after the season ended, this guy said he wanted to support me and fund my career, which is massive for me. That was a, you know, complete game changer. And I'd already started working in a factory as a welder, and didn't think that after Formula Ford I would have funding to go anywhere. So, as a backup, I started working in this factory. So immediately when this guy began and told that he wanted to fund my career, I quit that job and, you know, started doing Formula Renault 2.0 in Europe, and then it kind of started for real.
I was going to say, is that the moment that you then thought, this could be a career, I could actually make this something, I could get to it? Were you thinking even F1 by then, or are you just thinking being a racing driver?
No, I've always been very sort of naive, I think. I always had this complete blind belief that it would happen. You know, now that I look back, I can get sweaty hands of how many times it almost didn't happen. But, you know, back then I was just not worried about it. I had this weird complete trust that it would happen, and you know, so I wasn't too worried. I when I started working in the factory, I was pretty sure that, you know, working in that factory wasn't what I wanted to do. You know, I was like, okay, I gotta find a way to to find some funding for next year. And then it happened, you know. So it's funny, I just always believed that it would happen.
Did you then maybe use those moments or those feelings in that factory as like your motivation when you were racing? Like, I didn't
need any motivation. It was more like an eye opener of what normal jobs are like, you know. And I didn't like it. I wanted to be a racing driver, and up until that point, I only worked in that factory for 3 months, so it wasn't very long. But I still had a taste of what it's like to work, you know, to have a job. Basically, I have a job. Formula One is a job too, but it's different. So, I mean, it was good to have that experience. But still, you know, I was working in the factory, and I wasn't worried. I knew I wasn't going to be doing that for very long. And now that I look back, I don't know where that belief and sort of yeah, confidence came from. I had nothing, no securities anywhere for it to happen. So it's funny, and I'm glad it worked out.
I mean, did it all turn around very quickly then? Because is that about 2009 we're talking when you went to do Formula Renault?
Yeah, I think 9 was the first. Yeah, 8 was Formula Ford, 9 was Renault, yeah.
And then which year was it that McLaren picked you up?
Well, actually at the end of 2008.
Okay.
I had this letter from Ron Dennis from back when my dad was a test driver for McLaren. Ron Dennis gave me this birthday present. I think it was in my second birthday or something, and it was a Playmobil washing thingy, some toy. And with it was a letter saying, you know, Ron, just joking around, if you ever become as good as your dad, give me a call. And so I showed my I had a manager, more like a friend who was helping me out at the time. And I showed her this letter, and she was immediately like, well, we got to go for it. We got to call them up or see if they'll do something. And she did, and actually it was Martin Whitmarsh then, and he thought it would be really funny to meet me because of the relationship to my dad and the history there. You know, it wasn't because I had won the Danish Formula 4 championship, you know, it was because of, so that's a place where my name really, you know, took me somewhere and opened the door. So we went and had that meeting with Martin, and he asked me, the first thing he asked me was if I smoke cigarettes, because my dad smoked cigarettes.
Yeah.
And he was like, before he even said hi to me, he asked me if I smoked cigarettes, so I could tell him that I wasn't. But then he took me on this young driver program, which, you know, the entry level is basically just like a training program. You get a piece of paper with some exercises on, and you know, you can call yourself a McLaren young driver. But it's a door open. You know, you step in 1 foot into McLaren, and it was big for me. So I was really happy about that. And then I guess they were just kind of watching me. You know, they'd send someone from McLaren to some of my races and to see how I work and how I do. So through the Renault year, and the next was F3 in Germany, then F3 in England, they were really keeping an eye on me. And then they had the program split into 3 levels, A, B, and C, which C was the entry level. So they moved me up into the B level after, I think, British Formula 3. And that means you get to drive the simulator, and you move to Woking, work with the team. You start getting these classes in like vehicle dynamics, aerodynamics. They put you in like almost like an apprentice in the gearbox department or the electronics. And so you learn all these different departments. And it was really cool, learned a lot. But I, you know, was really anxious to get to the A level, because that's when you get to drive the real car, and you get like a test driver contract, and you know, it's a proper job by then. So they gave me that's when I, after British F3, that's when I got the A level, and I think that's when they gave me the young driver test. So that was big for me. So
do you think that all hinged then on your friend phoning up, if that hadn't happened and you hadn't told them that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, the chance of McLaren without that phone call from my friend, you know, I don't know why. If McLaren would have picked me up, I don't know. You know, at the time they picked me up, I didn't have the results to show for it. You know, it was just because they thought it would be funny to have, you know, Magnussen's son, you know, give it a shot, I guess, see how he is, because they thought might be funny. But, you know, it's cool. You know, I'm very lucky.
Yeah. And you say about how you then progressed all the way through, but you could see your progression with the results you were getting in the junior categories. But then you got to 2013 and you had a year's experience under your belt in Formula Renault. You're going for the title against Stoffel, who is also McLaren affiliated. Were you told it was like now or never at that point? Did they say to you, you've got to win the championship this year?
Yeah, they clearly said that. That was like something they sat me down. You know, I was called to Martin's office, and he was there with Aki Hintzer, who was the doctor at McLaren, he was very involved with the drivers, and especially the young drivers, and like the driver selection. I would almost say he was like almost like a bit of a Dr. Helmut at McLaren. So yeah, after my first year in World Series, I'd had a couple of wins, a couple of pole positions, but it hadn't been consistent at all. So my position in the championship, I think I was P6 or 7 in the championship. I'd shown great potential, great speed, but they really wanted to see more consistency. And so they told me, you know, next year you get one more year, you have to win World Series in your second year. If not, you know, won't happen for you. Which, you know, just kind of set such a clear goal for me. You know, I knew I had the confidence that my speed was there. So I knew, okay, I've got to just take some second places and some third places. And, you know, when the win is just right there, I'll take it. But if not, I'll settle, you know. So that was like the mentality. And I started the year, I had in Monza, I was, you know, on the second row or something. And had a really good start, was actually about to go for the lead into turn one, but I just, you know, I said no, let's wait and see what happens. So I pulled out of that battle, and I think I finished second. So I'd never done anything like that before. You know, I'd always been very, very uncompromising in my driving, and so it just I kept doing like that. So I got halfway through the year, and I had built up a really good lead. I'd been on the podium in almost every race, won a couple, and my points were big. So by that time I started to be able to take more risk, and then I won basically the second half of the year, won every race and took every pole, and you know, because pressure just came off, and got this momentum going, and then got the seat.
How quickly did they tell you had the seat, and did you know winning that championship would get you a seat, or did you just know it would mean that you didn't miss out?
No, I think I was thinking that I would go to Force India, because McLaren had this relationship with Force India. They were supplying gearboxes. Well, Force India was buying gearboxes off McLaren, so that gave McLaren some power at Force India. And you know, so I think there was some deal going on there to place me at Force India for some years, and then to kind of develop and learn. For then, you know, to McLaren to then take me back if I performed well. But then something happened very late. I already had a seat at Force India, and it was I thought I was. It hadn't been announced, but I thought that was imminent. So suddenly, Martin Wittmars is fired from McLaren, and Ron Dennis comes back, takes the role of CEO again, and things changed. So I got the McLaren drive.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I mean, how late was it that you got the call that said, that's what you're doing? And what was your reaction then when you got that call?
It was after the World Series season. I would say November, maybe. Something like that. Might have been December. It was crazy. It was very big. You know, growing up, my dad had been a McLaren driver. He did his first Formula One race with McLaren, standing in for Mika Häkkinen. And McLaren had just been my dream. You know, I always had McLaren as like my dream Formula One team. And it was so crazy to get the news that I got the drive. It was a really big day.
Yeah, before we get on to exactly how it went there with them, but you mentioned your dad then, and you said about earlier how the name opened a door at McLaren. by that stage, when you're about to become an F1 driver, you know you're going into the category. What's your relationship with your dad like in that sense? Are you then leaning on him for the experience of what he knows and had as an F1 driver? Or are you thinking, I want to prove myself as me?
Yeah. I think I've always been fortunate. My dad has never really been so involved. He's never tried to be that involved, which I think has been a great help for me because, you know, I think as a young guy, I wasn't very good at listening to my dad. It was annoying when he said anything, you know, especially if he was right, then it was really annoying.
I think that's the case for everyone, don't worry.
So I think it was really good of him to kind of step back and just let me get on with it. I think he realized that if I have to be successful, then I've got to really learn. I don't need to be like him, you know. I need to become whoever I am and whatever racing driver I am. So I think that's good, you know, the right approach. So I think, but, you know, there's obviously some good things come from being a Magnussen, being a son of a Formula One driver. I'm very lucky.
Well, you say that, but then not everything from that point on worked out in the most lucky way. I mean,
no,
you went into a McLaren team that was used to competing for wins and titles, and first race probably was a bit of a dream. I mean, I guess let's focus on that feeling first. Or did that feel like you announced yourself to the F1 world by standing on the podium at your first Grand Prix?
Well, I guess so. It messed up all my expectations completely. Yeah. I think my expectations were messed up even before the first race, because getting on the podium was kind of just on par with my expectations. So that meant my expectations were, you know, crazy and wrong, because the car we had at McLaren wasn't a championship contender. It was a good car. It's probably the most competitive car I've had in Formula One. But, you know, in my mind, I just won a championship in World Series, and, you know, my next logical step in my mind was to go into Formula One and you know, fight for wins, you know, pick up where I left, and that's not how it worked, you know. And once it became clear that the car wasn't a championship contender, I became very, very frustrated, and every race I would be hoping that, you know, it would just be, you know, one bad race or two bad races and we'd come back, you know. So it was just one big frustration. And on top of that, midway through the year, McLaren told me and Jensen that they'd signed Fernando Alonso and that they hadn't yet, you know, decided who would stay. So it became a very, very tough fight with Jensen suddenly. You know, and he's a very experienced and very good racing driver. I felt like I was faster than him, but he would just be so good in the race. And I remember chatting to his dad at some point, actually before the season started, and his dad said, you know, maybe Jensen isn't the fastest racing driver in the world, but he is the best. So I thought that was really telling. Like, I thought, oh, that's a good way of thinking about it, you know. Mm. And it kind of was true. I mean, Jensen was, maybe I was faster than him, but he was so clever in the races and always just got the best out of it, it seemed, on Sunday. So I learned a lot from Jensen. Of course, I lost the seat. I think Jensen was also good at, you know, getting in with the right people and the owners of the team, whereas I never spoke to the owners, I think. So, you know, I thought my driving would talk on its own. So, yeah, I lost the seat. But then, you know, that was unlucky, but then I got lucky again afterwards, so it's okay.
I was going to say, partly did it feel lucky when you saw what happened the following year? Because when Honda came back in, that looked like a pretty tough place to be, and I don't think it would have done anyone's driving reputation much good.
Yeah, it's true, but I don't know. It was tough not being there. You know, I thought my Formula One career was over. Mm. So, yeah, it was tough. You know, I was very sad. Because I hadn't, it only just started, and it was a disappointing season in my head, and then I lost it. You know, I was out. So it was very tough. I mean, I was really down in that time, and then, you know, I got this lucky opportunity with Renault that took over, and then Melton out losing his sponsor and all of that. This time around, this year is not the first time that I got lucky in Formula One. That, you know, I feel very lucky, although some unlucky things happened too. It's overall, when I look at my career, I've been extremely lucky.
Yeah, let's talk about that kind of Renault move then. I mean, you kind of took that on off the back of when it looked like McLaren was still trying to keep you involved for a while. So was it, I guess, difficult to leave the team that you just called a dream, or to see that end? Or was it just all excitement about
Renault? I think I became very focused, you know, on the new opportunity I had. So it's not like I wasn't looking back. You know, once I saw that this opportunity came about, I was going for it. So, you know, and it was a factory deal, and Renault, you know, they'd been so successful in the past, and they told me that expectations were low because they just basically bought Lotus and they hadn't developed their car for, you know, a season or a season and a half. So, you know, they'd fell behind massively. Plus, they would have to run, obviously, the Renault engine, take the Mercedes engine out and put the Renault in, and that wasn't a good thing either. So, at the time at least. So, well, we were basically the slowest team apart from Manor, I think. So it wasn't a great year. It was okay. I had, you know, some good results. I got P7 in that car, which was such a slow car. It was a big result. Scored another point somewhere else. So it was a good year. And I felt like I learned a lot, and I had this kind of reset feeling in my mind that, you know, okay, we're not going to win races here. So it was kind of the very opposite of McLaren, was I thought I was going to win races. With Renault, I thought we were going to be last the whole year. And actually, we scored some points. So that was a good year in a way. I kind of fell out with the management a little bit, and, you know, for different reasons. I really liked the team. There's a lot of good people there, and, you know, I would have liked to continue, actually, if it wasn't for, you know, because I could feel that the team wasn't really behind me, or not the team, the management. So, you know, I was looking elsewhere. And that's when Günther and Jean came into the picture. Got that opportunity, which is good, because, you know, I think I would have stayed with Renault for another year, but Renault would have booted me after that year, and then it would have been probably over, I think.
Really, you think that would have been it?
That was why I took the Haas seat after the 2016 season. Renault offered me another year, but I said, look, you're going to have to offer me 2 years, because I'd been seeing Carlos Sainz Sr. in the team quite often in the hospitality, in and out of Cyril's office, and, you know, I could kind of put two and two together and say, okay, Carlos has a contract with Toro Rosso for another year, and then they want Carlos. So, yeah, I said I want a 2-year deal, otherwise I'm off. And then they said, okay, you can only get one. So I went to Haas.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like the lack of South American money for Pastor meant that door opened for you, but then North American money then opened another door.
Yeah.
And when that came about, then did that feel like finally a home for you going to Haas?
Yeah, very much. I mean, even if Renault had offered me a 2-year deal, I think it was so good for me to get this change of environment. You know, it's such a different environment at Haas than Renault and McLaren. You know, it's just Günther and Jean. That's it. Those are the two people that decide everything. And, you know, there's just less BS, you know. Günther is a very passionate guy, and he can, you know, lose his temper once in a while. But, you know, it's at least he's honest. You know, what he thinks, you know what he thinks. So I think me and Günther actually get on very well. And, I think it's fun to be with a small team, to be the underdogs, and, you know, in a couple of seasons we've been overachieving massively, fighting teams that are, you know, 10 times as big as us. So that's really funny and enjoyable when it happens. Of course, there's been some tough years where we have struggled with the car and not been competitive. But now, you know, this year, for example, we're back in the mix again and we're really fighting some big teams.
Yeah. If we skip forward a bit, because I won't make you go through all the ups and downs of the Haas spell, because that almost looked like normal F1 life for once. But end of 2020, when you were leaving, at the time you said you're ready and you're ready to go and try and win again in other things. But looking back now, is that true? Were you ready?
I think, you know, I was very accepting. I think I said that, you know, I feel like I'm at my best. Mm. So I'm also ready for the next step, like in Formula One. If that had happened, I would feel ready for it. Because after those years, I felt like the experience that I got, you know, the level of experience had become very good. And I felt very confident, much more confident than I did in my first year. So I just felt like I was at the best that I'd been in Formula One. And I don't know, the opportunity wasn't there. So I lost the seat at Haas and, you know, went and did a contract with sports car teams and had a really fun year, but I was ready for that in the way that, you know, I felt like I'd got a chance in Formula One. I did the best I could, and you know, my dream was to be a world champion. It didn't happen, but you know, actually I was lucky to even get a chance to race in Formula One and be a Formula One driver, whereas you know, I'd never been able to think of it like that. I would always be, you know, so disappointed if someone told me you're not going to be a Formula One driver. You know, if he could look into the future and tell me that, I'd be so sad. But I accepted it and moved on. And then now I'm here again. So I've been lucky once again.
I was going to say before we wrap this up that full disclosure was we were meant to do this in Daytona back in January, and circumstances meant we didn't manage to. And a lot has happened between now and then as we sit here in Azerbaijan. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, you left your home to go on holiday in, I guess, late February, early March.
Yeah, early March.
And you said you got the call from Gunther, I think, before you left.
Yeah.
But you still went on holiday. You didn't stay around to wait and see what happened. Did you not really believe it was going to happen? Did you not want?
Yeah. I didn't think it was going to happen. I mean, even before Gunther called me, I didn't think I was, you know, a subject. I didn't think I was on the list. I thought, you know, the reason I lost the seat in 2020 was because the team had to make some changes. They were in trouble, and yeah. So, you know, I didn't think I would be on the list. So when Gunther called, of course, I was very surprised to see his name on my phone, and you know, I thought, well, I think I know what he's gonna ask. And then we talked about it. He asked if I wanted to come back. He said there was a few things that he had to sort out, and I also had a few things I needed to sort out. So I thought, you know, I told my wife about it, talked to her, you know, she said, go for it. But we agreed that we're still going to go on this holiday because, you know, I know that these things, probably, you know, 1 out of 10 of these opportunities actually land, you know. So I guess there was also a little bit of like superstition. If I leave, it would be super uncomfortable and like inconvenient if I have to go from Miami to Bahrain. But you know, it's like if you bring an umbrella, it never rains. So yeah. I think it was a little bit like that too. So yeah, I made that long. We were in Miami for one day.
That's a long trip because, like you say, you had to come the other way. But then, do you view this kind of second chance, third chance, fourth chance in Formula One in the way that you've described them? Do you view it as a break? Could we call that your big break? Or do you view it as a bonus? Had you kind of thought this chapter was closed and the reopening is a bonus? Because talking to you, you seem so much more relaxed this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. I think it's a lot less scary this time around. And when I say scary, I mean the pressure hits me less somehow. I think having been out of Formula One and actually mentally, you know, closing that chapter, and also having had a great time outside of Formula One, I think coming back, I still get all the joy of being in Formula One and still feel super lucky. And, you know, driving the car is so awesome. This racing on these great tracks around the world against these great drivers and teams, you know, it's all of that is still there. the feelings and the passion, but it's not as scary to lose it. So I think it's easier somehow to be in this position now than it ever has been, because I'm not so scared of losing it. I'm more, I can just be happy about being here, and every race, every day that I get in this position, I just feel lucky. You know, I just feel grateful, rather than, you know, always like scared of losing it. It's more like just busy enjoying it.
Well, it's great to have you back. It's great to see you enjoy it too. Kevin, thank you very much for your time.
Cheers, no worries.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.